From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Build. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Hackathon. If you don't write code for a living, that word sounds like something out of a science fiction show. However, for college students hoping to break into the fields of technology, engineering, and entrepreneurship, hackathons have become an essential rite of passage. Holed up in close quarters for a weekend with lots of pizza and very little sleep, teams of undergrads test each other's skills while building out new ideas from scratch. On this episode of The Build, I'm talking to Pranav, the undergraduate student in charge of leading the team that stages this massive event twice each year. He'll show us why he thinks hackathons have become so important to both students and business owners, and he'll share some of the things that you can do to bring hackathon to your community. It's the story of Penn Apps, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
It's The Build. I'm Joe Taylor Jr., joined today by Pranav, who is the current director of Penn Apps, which is, to my knowledge, one of, if not the largest, student-organized hackathons in the world. Accurate?
Yeah, I would say so.
So tell me a little bit, because I will spoil my own age here, because when I was in school, you would become the editor of the school newspaper or the program director of the student newspaper. And now in 2016, when this airs, we have things like student director positions of hackathons. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, we still have editors for the student newspaper, so that hasn't gone anywhere. But yeah, there's definitely a lot more that you can do as a student, especially in like the technology space. And running a hackathon is probably one of the most intense, but really, really satisfying things you can do with your time as a student, if that's the kind of thing you're interested in.
So you are currently an undergraduate?
Yeah, so I'm a junior in the management and technology program at Penn.
Okay. And so by the time you got to Penn in 2013, Penn Apps was at what point in its development?
I want to say that was the sixth Penn Apps, maybe the fifth or sixth. Penn Apps started in 2009, and we've been having one every semester since then. So this last one in the fall was the 12th Penn Apps.
And it was also the biggest because you actually had to move into an arena, a literal arena, to fit everybody that wanted to play.
Yeah, we had to move to the Wells Fargo Center, which is where the Flyers and the 76ers play. And so it was absolutely insane in terms of scale. We pretty much doubled where we were before that.
So walk us through, a lot of folks who listen to the show may not necessarily be in technology. They are building businesses of their own. So tell us a little bit, what is a hackathon?
Sure. So a hackathon is sort of like a catch-all phrase to broadly sort of talk about this thing where a lot of people stop what they're doing, what they do day to day, and maybe for a day, maybe for a few days, it usually varies depending on the hackathon, you decide to sit down with a few people, build a team, and try and make something. So as opposed to a pitch competition where, you know, the point is to come up with an idea that's great, the point of the hackathon is to actually make something, make a minimum viable product of some kind that actually works and does something and hopefully is really cool.
And so the goal here tends to be try to execute an idea in real time, and at the end, whether you win or lose, put something in front of judges who could maybe help you move forward in your career.
So I'd say the objectives of a hackathon change depending on the context of a hackathon. If you're at a company hackathon, then the objective is, let me figure out the best idea to, you know, move our company forward, and hopefully the upper management, the executives like it and ask me to continue working on this. Or if you were at some place like TechCrunch Disrupt, the objective is, oh, let me make a minimum viable product to put in front of VCs and maybe they'll like it and you know, jumpstart my funding. At a student hackathon, the objective is, you know, how many skills can I learn in a weekend, or what can I like put together with the skills that I do know and turn them into something practical? And for some people, yes, they're trying to, you know, go forward with that. But that isn't the case with everyone. A lot of students are just there to learn. A lot of students are there maybe just to win a prize, to meet people. It's a great way to meet a lot of other people, whether they be from sponsors, like really cool companies, or just other students from all over the country, all over the world that are like-minded.
PenApps, to my knowledge, is one of the few hackathons that you really have to plan ahead to become a part of. Walk us through what it takes to actually get to play on that scale.
Right. So if you want to participate in PenApps, and let's say you're not a Penn student, you're going to need to apply. We have applications a few months out, at least. I think we had applications open in like May for the hackathon in September, and we had them open through July. And then you have to get through this application process. And we've gotten to the point where even last time with 2,000 people in the Wells Fargo Center, we still had to reject about 70% of the people that applied to PenApps because we just had so many people interested. And so you need to get through that application process, and then you sort of RSVP. The nice part, though, is that we cover all of your expenses once you are accepted. So if you're coming from anywhere in the U.S., we will cover all of your travel expenses. We'll give you food. You basically stay all weekend. So you pay nothing as a student. And that's one of the coolest things about PenApps. And a lot of other student hackathons sort of follow a similar model.
So for PenApps, these are all students. They're typically engineering students, technology students.
They are all students. So PenApps is a student-only hackathon. It's a little disappointing for the people right as they graduate, but they often come back as mentors to help out other people. So it's still definitely a big and very fast-growing community. But it isn't just engineers. Yes, it started off as a lot of, you know, computer science people and slowly broadened into more engineers. But at the moment, I'd say it's even broader than that. You'll find a lot of students who are business majors, who are from the humanities, especially designers. So it's very much, and this is something we try at PenApps more so than other college hackathons, to sort of make it a very cross-disciplinary kind of thing.
So when folks apply, are they applying as individuals or as teams?
They can do both.
Okay.
If you apply as a team, we try to look at you as a team. You apply as an individual, we'll look at you as an individual. You apply as a team and the team doesn't make it, we'll still look at you as individuals and try to get as many of them in as possible. So
now the hackathons that I've been involved with in the past are usually a little bit more or a little less formal, a little deliberately less organized, and folks will arrive and self-select into teams. Usually, in some cases, a team will be imposed upon somebody. What's the process to actually organize 2,000 people into functioning teams over a weekend?
Yeah. So one of the interesting things about it being a college hackathon is usually you're a bunch of college students, you're going to try and go with some friends. And the moment you're going with some people you know, the odds of you teaming up with them go up a lot. So I'd say a majority of the teams at PenApps come to PenApps as teams, but that's not to say it's like 90%, maybe like 60% of the people come with teams and the other 40% just show up and find each other. We even have a Facebook group that we form right after everyone's accepted to PenApps where people can sort of find other people going to PenApps and just team up with each other. And so a lot of people tend to make teams before PenApps, but they often team up with people they just met over a Facebook group.
Are the teams aware of what they're going to work on in advance, or does that happen when they arrive?
So here's another place where college hackathons differ from company hackathons or themed hackathons. Most college hackathons don't have a theme to hack on, so you're free to come and literally build anything you want. So it's completely up to the people that come. Again, I don't have real numbers on this, but just based on like what I've seen, I'd say maybe half the teams coming to PenApps come with an idea and the rest of them show up and sort of look around and see what are the resources available to me. And based on that, try to come up with something they want to make. So a lot of the focus for us as organizers then becomes, what are, you know, the coolest resources? What are the best resources we can bring to all of these students to sort of inspire them to build something or to build on something?
So coming back to the idea of applying to Penn Apps and getting accepted, if you're telling me that 2,000 people played last semester, are you doing it at Wells Fargo again this coming semester?
So we're not doing it at the Wells Fargo Center in the spring semester. Part of that is because basketball season is on, so that's not happening. But it's also because we don't want to completely move away from Penn. We work very closely with Penn Engineering, and they provide a lot of support to us. And one of our missions at Penn Apps is to bring the best hackers to Penn. And to sort of have all of our students, you know, working alongside them, working with them, you know, friendly competition, that kind of thing. And we don't want to move away from Penn completely. So we're going to stay on Penn's campus for at least one of the two semesters, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Where about on campus do you operate?
So when we're on campus, we essentially take over every single engineering building. So we take over all the engineering buildings, every single classroom, every single lecture hall, and line the corridors with tables. So pretty much anywhere you can fit people, we fit people.
If there's a square foot, yeah, there's an engineer in there working on something.
Yes.
So 2,000 people came to the last one. That was 30% or so acceptance rate, which means 5,000-6,000 people applied and didn't get accepted. What are the ingredients for a good proposal? What do you put in the application to get yourself selected for Penn Apps?
There's a number of factors. So mostly what we're looking for is someone who's, you know, really passionate about wanting to come to Penn Apps or wanting to hack. It's not necessarily wanting to come to Penn Apps. It's about, do you show us somehow that you are passionate to build? And people are free to write whatever they want, link whatever they want when they apply. So some of the coolest applications we tend to see are people just, you know, giving us a bunch of links to things they've made that are really cool. Or every once in a while, you know, there'll be people who maybe haven't made that much, but have, you know, described the efforts they've gone to build a sort of community of builders and makers and hackers at their school. And that's also really inspiring. Or we'll often find people who, you know, are just really good at what they do. And maybe they don't spend all their time building side projects, but they have some really, really cool things that they've made, or they just really know what they know very well. It's really just looking for, are you looking for a free trip to Philadelphia, or do you really want to be making something at Penn Apps? And that's really the litmus test. And past that, it's sort of a function of how far away you are, how much it's going to cost to fly you out, and so on.
It doesn't seem, though, that you're going to get to see a lot of Philadelphia, because the event itself takes up quite a chunk of time.
Yeah. That it does, but there's a good number of people that will fly in about a day early, leave a day late, spend a little time, meet some friends. They have friends going to university. There's tons of universities in town. They'll come by, meet some friends, hang out with them. So there's quite a few people that will, you know, still come hack, like be a part of the full event and still get to see a good bit of Philly.
Bookend it with some sightseeing and some, yeah, you know, time to wind up or unwind. So walk me through the timeline. What happens at kickoff, and then what do you observe during the event? What stages do teams go through as they're working on their projects?
Sure. So kickoff is Penn Apps runs Friday evening through Sunday afternoon, pretty much. And you hack from 8 p.m. on Friday to 9 a.m. on Sunday. But the kickoff is a little before the start of hacking, obviously. Kickoff is usually, you know, we'll get someone who's an interesting speaker. We'll usually have a lot of the companies who are sponsoring Penn Apps who have brought, you know, tools for people to work with or have prizes for certain things that people can build. come up on stage and, you know, do short pitches about what they've got to offer, trying to get people to hack on what they've brought in. But a lot of Friday evening tends to be, you know, team formation. If you haven't come with a team, we have a ton of workshops Friday evening. So we try to make PanApps very accessible to students who aren't already pro hackers. So there, and one of the reasons we have a lot of those people, because, you know, we have this application process. So you might think, oh, like there's no newbies at all at PanApps. All, like we pretty much let in, this last time we let in everyone from the local Philadelphia area who was a student. This includes Penn students, Drexel, Temple, or any high schools within like a, I think a 25 mile radius. So we had a huge amount of people who were, you know, new to hacking or maybe didn't even know any programming. And so we have a ton of workshops Friday evening to sort of help people ease their way into actually making things. And so that's largely what Friday evening tends to be, is it's a lot of, you know, socializing with people, meeting people, going to workshops, meeting the companies, getting a lot of free swag because we have a ton of sponsors, right, from like Apple and Google to Comcast, who was our title sponsor last time, to startups. So there's a wide range of companies and all of them bring insane amounts of free swag to give away to the students. So there's often a mad rush for, you know, getting all the swag before it runs out. And it's sort of just a very social atmosphere Friday evening. About Saturday, you know, people start to have an idea. You're like, we know what we're building now. And it's a lot of, all right, like, let's figure out how we're doing this. Let's get any help we want. Let's get any APIs. Let's get any hardware. Let's make sure we have everything we need to be able to build this. And so a lot of Saturday tends to be, you know, let's get down and start working on this. And we try to break it up through the course of PanApps with, you know, a lot of fun side events. So we'll have Quizzo. We've had ice skating in the past. Just, you know, fun things that you can do to sort of take a break from constantly working on your project. But a lot of Saturday tends to be when, you know, people are, you're really like getting down and dirty and like really getting through the project. And then by about Saturday night, everyone's a little tired. People start taking quick naps and then try and pull an all-nighter for the home stretch leading up to Sunday morning.
So Sunday morning, you start to demo what you've built. What does that look like?
So that's probably like the most like crazy part of PanApps. It's the part that if you're walking into PanApps, that's the part you want to see because it's absolutely awe-inspiring. So what we had was the entire floor of the Wells Fargo Center filled with tables. We had a science fair style expo of everyone's projects. So you just see like this insane amount of people on the floor, everyone having built something and showing off what they've built to everyone else. And that's absolutely just incredibly inspiring to watch. You see, you know, all sorts of stuff from like someone last time just built a contraption that folded t-shirts for you or folded any clothes really. So you'd put it on there and you turn it on and like different parts of it would fold, like, you know, flap up, flap down, and eventually you'd end up with a folded t-shirt. And that was just a really cool thing that some high schoolers built that it has no practical application, but it's a really cool thing.
I don't
know.
If you work at the Gap, it sounds like it would be great.
Yeah. So you see everything from that to like devices for, you know, we had last time, one of the big routes that we promoted and we got people to work on. We're working with Code for Philly in the city of Philadelphia. It was the civic hacking route. So we saw a lot of people who built hacks that were, you know, for social good or for government good. So there were hacks that, you know, made it very simple to fill out all the government forms you needed to do anything. So you just picked what you wanted to do. It would just, in a very nice, easy to read way, give you a bunch of prompts asking you for information. And at the end of it, you had completely filled out government forms that you just needed to sign.
So I heard you use the word routes, and I understand that you've been using that to make the experience a little more digestible for teams. Tell me a little bit about the concept behind routes and how you executed on it.
Yeah. So one of the ways before we introduce routes that pretty much every college hackathon is set up is you can build anything you want. And then you have a lot of sponsors who come to an event and they have a lot of prizes that they offer for, you know, the best use of my API. And that's great. It means that there's a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of incentives, but it also means that your incentive structure is slightly skewed. Because now if you're a hacker coming to PenApps or any college hackathon, what you want to do is win the most prizes. And so you're incentivized to throw as many, you know, random APIs together as possible to maximize your chance of winning at least one of those prizes and getting the recognition of having won something. But now throwing like 10 APIs together isn't necessarily going to result in anything that makes sense or is really something that people want. It's only optimized to win the prize. It's not optimized for any real world use case. So our idea with the routes was the main reason we think people do that is because they want the recognition of having won something. It's not because, you know, you won a $200 Amazon gift card or an Xbox One or whatever the prize is. It's because you can say, I went to PenApps and I won this prize. So you're like, why don't we offer more prizes for things that would incentivize you to work on really useful, cool, or just fun things? So we had routes that range from civic hacking to virtual reality to just humor. And each of them had a prize associated with it. So we said, we'll give you a prize. We'll give you recognition for working in one of these spaces. But, you know, go and do something really cool with it. So don't feel limited by the fact that the other than, you know, the top three, like the grand prizes, of which out of like 2000 people, three teams are going to get, then, you know, you're not as interested in that. You're more interested in sponsor prizes. So we said, let's give you more prizes. And moreover, let's give you the resources. So if you want to work on civic hacking, we're gonna ask the city of Philadelphia and Code for Philly to come in and, you know, help you guys get started. We're going to help them get you ideas, give you support through the weekend. And maybe that'll be enough incentive to get people to work on that. Or something like virtual reality, where we said, all right, we're just going to have 50 Oculus Rifts. And if you want to hack on virtual reality, we'll give you an Oculus Rift. Here you go. So it's the sort of combination of having some way for you to get recognition and a lot of support for you to work on those routes that we think worked really well last time. And we're doubling down on it for like the next PenApps. And I think we're going to continue to keep expanding the scope of that because it seems to have worked really well and people responded very positively to it.
So this is a pretty significant undertaking. You are organizing this while you're still maintaining a full course load as an undergraduate student. How did you end up in a position to be running an organization like this?
Yeah, I'll tell you how I ended up there. I think it's a fairly similar set of reasons though that any of the other people on PenApps, and we have a pretty large team that's all absolutely amazing. And I think it's a pretty similar reason why we all do it. I attended PenApps like 2 weeks into my freshman semester. It was one of the reasons I actually picked Penn as the place to go to college because I heard about PenApps and I was like, this is really cool. So 2 weeks in, I go to PenApps and it was insane. It was absolutely out of the world. That was the first time a hackathon had been over 1,000 participants, and the atmosphere is just electric. It's very hard for me to put into words how inspiring it is to see like everyone around you building things that you cannot imagine building. For me personally, I thought it was just the most inspiring thing. And I tried to take part and my team failed miserably in terms of like actually building something by the end of it. But it was an incredible experience. And the moment I was done with it, I was like, I need to join the team of people that puts this together because this is such an amazing event. And I have like 100 ideas now to make it better. And so I think it's a pretty similar story for anyone else who joined PenApps. They either participated in or volunteered at PenApps and really just loved the atmosphere. It's as I said, it's impossible for me to describe, but if you ever go to a very large hackathon, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, it seems like there's a meta issue here, which is you're tasked with, in that same amount of time, building the environment in which creative people can flourish, But that in and of itself becomes the thing that you are building during the hackathon.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big reason of why I still love doing it. I mean, this next PenApps, I think, will be the fifth PenApps I've organized. And I'm still enjoying every moment of it because every single time you're building this incredible environment and you get to see all of these people building all of these things because you went to the effort of, you know, making all of that possible. So I'm not saying I'm trying to take credit for everything everyone builds at PenApps, but it's just great to see that you've enabled that to happen. And it's a little addicting. It's sort of, you know, my way of feeling like I'm doing some good for my university, my community, other people like me who, you know, are really enjoy technology and might want to build it, but maybe at some point in time didn't feel like they knew enough to.
So tell me about the biggest challenge, the biggest hurdle you had to overcome to actually make PenApps a reality in one of its instances.
So, I mean, so PenApps has been around for a while, but this time moving down to the Wells Fargo Center was essentially reinventing the wheel because we had all of these processes that, you know, we've fine-tuned over the years, all of these things we do, all of the people we work with that know what is expected how the event works. And we had to redefine all of that and, you know, work with a completely new set of people all over again to move down to the Wells Fargo Center. Now they've never seen, and to people who aren't familiar with a hackathon, the concept of a hackathon is very daunting if you're a facilities person, because facilities don't stay open for 48 straight hours. You don't keep facilities open overnight. The Wells Fargo Center has never been open as long as we kept it open in one stretch. The Wells Fargo Center has never had tables lined up in the concourses, and literally every single part of the building was filled with tables and chairs for people to sit and work at. And so just working with a completely new set of people, explaining over and over to a lot of people what a hackathon was, how it worked, was a very long process. It was very, very rewarding when it all came together. But the process of sort of turning a sports stadium into a hackathon is a non-trivial one.
Well, I think beyond probably hearing the question a lot of, you want to do what?
Yeah.
It's probably what you heard a lot that time. One of the things that I'd love to get your perspective on, as an undergraduate student, you're organizing this event and partnering with vendors, facilities people, folks who've probably been in their jobs or their roles for 10, 20, 30 years in some cases. I mean, there are some folks that have worked in arenas for their entire career. And now basically they've got to take orders from an undergrad who's showing them how to do things that they've never in a million years thought they would ever need to figure out how to solve. So how do you build rapport with someone when you are trying to direct them through something you are very familiar with, but they've never experienced?
There's two parts to answering that then. And I think both of them were definitely equally important. One was that we've worked very closely with Penn Engineering for years, because PenApps has been in Penn Engineering. And we work closely with the facilities people at Penn Engineering. So they're very familiar with the needs of our event, and they're also facilities people that have been doing this for years. So when we wanted to move to the Wells Fargo Center because we ran out of space in Penn Engineering, we worked with them, and they were incredible. The support Penn Engineering gave us this time was invaluable, and it wouldn't have happened without them. But basically, we had the facilities people from Penn Engineering working alongside us, who were like, and it was sort of us working with the facilities people at the Wells Fargo Center. And so whenever, you know, there was something that their facilities people, you know, needed to hear, we'd first talk to the facilities people from Penn Engineering and say, what's the best way to, you know, get this across? And often they'd help us talk to the people at the Wells Fargo Center. And it's sort of having that additional, you know, oh, here are other facilities people that understand my job who are telling me what this new event is. That helped a lot with sort of, you know, communication in that aspect. And another part of it was just, you know, we are undergraduate students, but a lot of us and sort of the people who work directly with the Wells Fargo Center were people who've been around long enough that we also know, like, we pretty much know every detail of what needs to happen at PanApps in terms of the facilities and what we need. And so when you talk to other facilities people, yes, they see you as a student and an undergrad first, but the moment you show that you know what you're talking about, they were all very reasonable people, and it was an absolute pleasure working with all of them.
So when you attend other hackathons, when you don't have to wear your organizer's hat, what do you look to get out of a hackathon as a participant?
I have a few answers for that, but I should start off by saying, even though I don't have my organizer hat on, in the sense that I'm not organizing their hackathon, I still have my organizer hat on in terms of looking at all the things an organizer is going to look out for. So I'm still going to see and focus in on a lot of things that the average participant might not always. But that said, when I go to a hackathon, my goal, I have never gone to a hackathon to win a hackathon. I've only gone to a hackathon when I've decided I want to learn something new, and then I pick a technology and I go and make something with that. Or I have something in mind that I want to build, and a hackathon is just a really nice environment for me to go and build it. And then a good few times I have also gone to hackathons. Since I am an organizer, I have a lot of other friends who organize different hackathons. And so I've gone to other hackathons just to help out my friends with organizing theirs. So I have gone to a good few hackathons just as a volunteer.
So looking forward, looking beyond 2017 when you graduate, do you foresee bringing this into your career in terms of becoming a professional organizer? What's on the horizon for you? Where are you going to take all this experience?
I think for me, what I really enjoy is working with a lot of people, and working in different situations. I think working with people is just always very interesting, because you can never tell how someone's going to react to something, how different people's incentives line up. So really going forward, I think I just want to be in a place where my work centers a lot on sort of dealing with people and trying to get people to work towards a common goal, some kind of maybe managerial or project centered role, as opposed to maybe just an engineering role. But
so we'll wrap up with this. Tell me about the most exciting project you've seen come out of any hackathon in the past year or so. What got you really excited when you saw it getting demoed?
That's a hard question. There's a lot of very cool projects at hackathons, but I think personally one of the coolest ones I've seen, and I can't say that, you know, this is the kind of thing that's going to change the world. I just thought it was really cool when I saw it. Was this one game a group of people made about a year and a half ago with a slightly older version of the Oculus Rift. So it was one of the earliest demos. And they built this game where they synced the Oculus Rift up to a Microsoft Kinect. And you were essentially playing as Iron Man, and there were evil sharks attacking you, and you could simply move your arms and laser, like, kill them. And, you know, it's a very silly concept. There's nothing super exciting about the idea. But that was the first time I ever saw an Oculus Rift demo that actually was fun. I had tried a lot of Oculus Rift before that and a lot after that. And I've never had as much fun in an Oculus Rift game, because there's always something holding it back from feeling natural. And that was the only time, despite some pretty, you know, there was no premise to the game other than you can shoot things, but it was just so natural. And the sort of sync up between tracking your body and you feeling like you were in that new environment was so amazing that I'm just incredibly excited about what people are going to be able to do once, you know, virtual reality actually comes out as a consumer product, as something that's commercially available. It's absolutely awe-inspiring.
I think it references something that you said a little bit earlier, that some folks go into hackathons with goals of trying to mash things up based on levels of expertise within teams or subject matter experts that happen to be on hand. So what's compelling here is what conditions were created that someone that was really good with virtual reality headgear, which is Oculus Rift for folks that don't know it, and then the Kinect, which is an off-the-shelf consumer, essentially movement measurement device, just measures how you move around a room. But for the first time, somebody thought to put that together in a way that actually made sense for a player, but now start to envision other applications of that technology. You could think of things like virtual surgery or using it as an interface into something else, because this is the first time that we are actually getting to see the blend of these technologies together, and it's where they intersect is where really interesting things happen. So thinking ahead and thinking about beyond your graduation, right? Think about your fifth year reunion, your 10th year reunion. You come back to Penn Apps as, say, a sponsor or a mentor. What do you expect to see?
I'm not even sure. I don't think it's possible for me to predict what it's going to look like 5 years out, because what it looks like today is completely different from what it looked like 5 years ago. So hopefully I won't recognize it and I will be absolutely delighted by what I see.
Olympics proportions, maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
Great. Well, Pranav, thank you so much for coming on the Build. The next Penn Apps is going to be when?
The next Penn Apps is January 22nd to 24th. And the one after that, which hopefully will be really big again, will be sometime next September.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the Build.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.